Water cooler talk just got smarter. Bill Bennett's Morning in America.
Well, water cooler talk may have just gotten smarter, but I'm not sure about the bumper music, which sounds like it might be Dumber Claude. I don't know.
Mission accomplished.
It sounds suspiciously disco-y to me, doesn't it? Yeah. Well, that's all right. We'll move on quickly. It's Stephen Hayward sitting in for Bill Bennett today on the show. And joining us now by telephone is one of the premier political analysts of our time. It's Henry Olson of the Ethics and Public Policy Center, the co-author with Dante Scala of Four Faces of the Republican Party, the Fight for the 2016 Republican Nomination. Good morning, Henry. And let me do this question straight away to start things off quickly. Is Trump what we get when you fail to address the legitimate needs and worries of the working class in America?
Absolutely. The working class in America has been the losers in the American economy for at least the last 15 years. And if you ignore their concerns, they get angrier. And Donald Trump is stoking that anger masterfully.
Right. Well, we'll come back to that, some parts of that in a moment. But I think what we ought to do is go quickly through the four faces you identify in your book. And then we'll start with how Trump fits into them and whether he represents a fifth face or something in between. So what are the four faces briefly?
Four faces are the ideological factions of the Republican Party. Really, the question for the last 50 years in the Republican Party is, what extent should the party be the vehicle for the conservative movement? There are two very conservative factions who basically say, heck yes. One is the very conservative evangelical voter who prioritizes the social issues wing of movement conservatism. And the other is the very conservative secular voter who can be religious but isn't motivated by those issues. They emphasize the economic and defense wings of movement conservatism. The moderates are about a quarter of the party. There are still Republican moderates, and their answer is basically no. Republican Party should not be a vehicle for the conservative movement and will almost always oppose the candidate favored by the two very conservative factions. The largest faction is the one who decides the nomination. They're what many people call the establishment, but they tell pollsters that they're somewhat conservative. And their answer, as you might expect, is yes, it should be a movement conservative party to some extent, but not to the extent that the movement conservatives want. They're the ones who think that John Boehner is just fine by them.
Right. That's a different way of slicing up conservatism than is usually done, right? I mean, I'm used to the old division of traditionalist conservatives versus libertarians, neoconservatives, right? And this is a different arrangement for them. But do they map closely together, or in what ways do they, I guess libertarians would be part of your secular conservatives. Would that be right?
Right. They tend to be, libertarians can either be in the moderate wing, in the sense that most moderates are the old Rockefeller Republicans or people who are not very closely attached to the party, get excited by a candidate. But some libertarians who prioritize social issues and defense will say that they're moderate. Most will say that they're very conservative and they fall in the secular wing. They tend to be strong where you would think that libertarian Republicans are strong, places like Arizona and the Rocky Mountain West. It's just the typical distinctions that we talk about are more intellectual movements than they are mass voter movements. When you actually look at how the voters vote, a lot of the divisions that you might find intellectually line up in the same category when the voters actually cast their ballot.
Right. Yeah, that's a defect, a cross I have to bear, being too intellectual about these things. So the working class...
Yeah, I try not to be intellectual, Steve. It makes life easier.
You're probably right. Where does the working class fit in this map, or are they split in several different areas? I'm thinking of, the people in... the factory workers in Ohio and Indiana who've lost their jobs to foreign competition or who've had stagnant wages for a decade and a half, where do they fit in this map?
Yeah, I mean, they actually fit in. They can fit into the map if no one is specifically arguing with them. They will tend to be voters who are moderate, and they will tend to be voters who are somewhat conservative rather than movement conservative. But what Donald Trump is doing is he's trying to change the question that animates the Republican Party. Instead of the question, should the Republican Party be the vehicle for the conservative movement, he's asking, should the Republican Party be the vehicle for the losers in the modern economy?
Right.
And that means that he's combining those people who, if the question were ideological, would separate, and combining them into one group. That gives him his power. But on the other hand, what it means is that people who don't think that that should be the case, regardless of their ideology, are lining up against them. It's a completely different way to redefine the Republican Party. So Trump does well among all the factions, but that's because he's asking a different question.
Right. We're talking with Henry Olson, the co-author of Four Faces of the Republican Party. And the listeners, you should all go out and get this book. It's not very long. It's only, what, about 140 pages, I think, Henry? And it's written very crisply and easy to get through. And so that's why people don't
made the tables and the graphs easy to read.
Right. People shouldn't be scared of this description from me. It's an exquisite exercise in game theory, as we academics would say, because you game out, I'll put it that way, you know, how Republican primaries play out, how they've worked in the past, how they might work here. But I have to say, Henry, that I had to read it quickly, but Trump shows up at the end, and I know you were finishing the book when suddenly Trump came, not quite out of nowhere, but surprised everyone, right? And I love this understatement toward the end of the book where you say, and I'll quote it here, "Trump's candidacy throws a wrinkle into our analysis, as so far he draws from all factions of the party." Did you have to scramble at the end to figure out what to do about Trump?
We had to put the book together first before Trump even announced his candidacy, and then in the early part of the fall because of publication schedules before he had really shown some staying power.
Right.
So, yeah, it is an attempt to try and figure out. I would write that differently today because we have more data, and I think I understand the Trump phenomena better now than I did in late September when my co-author and I worked on that.
Right. Right. Now, you I've known you forever, 30 years now or more, in the last few years, your pessimism has been correct. I mean, you called that Mitt Romney was likely to lose in 2012 when the rest of us were being hopeful. You're not alone. I know there are other people who are very pessimistic about this election for some of the structural problems the Republican electorate has in presidential elections right now. On the other hand, I was reading Conrad Black the other day, who points out that if you compare Hillary Clinton's standing against Republican candidates, Rubio, Cruz, even Trump, from a year ago and now, you see tremendous erosion across the board for Hillary. So I've been through that, there's that map up, was it the Vox people, I forget, who have that? Oh, no, it's 538, and those guys have that map up of how you play with the electorate, and I know you geek out on those things in a big way. It seems to me that, although you're so gloomy, isn't there a case for optimism here? It's very rare for a party.
I'm long-term optimistic.
Uh-huh.
Americans don't want to be governed by the progressive left. What Americans want is a reasonable alternative that takes the best elements of movement conservatism and marries them to some populist elements. The reason I'm pessimistic in the short term is I don't see a Republican Party that has created that marriage yet, which is to say that we can win as Republicans negative elections where the question is, do you want to be run by progressives? But presidential elections are ultimately about choices, and if both choices are viewed by swing voters as unpalatable, they'll default to the least unpalatable, which, regretfully for conservatives, is the Democratic Party.
Right.
For the swing voter in America. And I think long-term Republicans will get this. Defeat tends to concentrate the mind, and three defeats tend to concentrate it greatly. And parties that lose three or four elections in a row do figure out how to talk to the electorate, but they usually have to lose three or four in a row before it gets through their thick skulls. And I wish it weren't so, but I think it is.
Now, what do you think of the theory that Ted Cruz and others like, that there were millions of missing voters in 2012 just waiting to be mobilized by someone like Cruz or Trump?
I think it's more true for Trump than it is for Cruz. The missing voters, to the extent that there were missing voters, tended to be more economically populist. They tended to be less ideological. And consequently, somebody who speaks to those concerns, like a Trump, is likelier to mobilize them than a Cruz. Although Cruz, to his credit, is trying to basically be a movement conservative populist with his harsh views on immigration and his flip-flop on free trade. The question is whether he could pull it off were he the nominee. I'm not convinced, but the fact is he's been doing very well, and I could be wrong.
Yeah, I have been a little bit surprised. Maybe I shouldn't be at this point. I didn't see Trump coming like this, and a lot of us didn't, but I have been struck by, I'll put it that way, the number of people I hear, some of whom are very sophisticated and follow politics very seriously, so they're not just casual viewers of The Apprentice, who said, I have not been this excited about a candidate like Trump since Ronald Reagan. And, I mean, you'd be surprised at some of the people I've heard say this who I would not have expected it from. Are you hearing things like
that? Well, I was shocked when Paris Hilton told you that.
It wasn't that. I got to give great confidences. So what's your prediction here about Trump? I mean, we've been wrong about this up till now.
The thing you have to remember is that when people feel marginalized, they respond to people who reaffirm their worldview. Or in other words, if you're kind of a wallflower, if somebody tells you you love them, they love you, that you're very likely to love them really hard back.
Yeah.
The people who are cottoning to Trump are the people who have been the losers in the American economy, whose values are often either neglected or ridiculed or worse by elites of both parties. They never hear people talking in simple to understand language that basically says your worldview is right and I'm here to get your back.
Right.
And Donald Trump says all of those things. So it doesn't surprise me now that I understand the Trump phenomenon better than I did in September. Doesn't surprise me at all that there are millions of people who feel that way, just like Ronald Reagan spoke to people who had been marginalized, disaffected, and ignored or belittled, and they loved him for saying what they believed to be the truth. Trump is not someone who is going to appeal to the philosophical conservative.
Right.
But he is going to appeal to someone who has seen America change and feels left out by all of the ideological leaderships on both sides of the party.
Right. We've only got
both sides of the two parties.
Right. We've only got about 30 seconds left, Henry, and I want to shift gears radically since a listener should know that your other great expertise is baseball and sports. Who do you like in Major League Baseball for this next season?
Well, you know, there's still a couple of big free agents, but I like the National League teams. I think the St. Louis Cardinals are poised for a comeback. I think the Giants have put together a top three starting pitching rotation to rival few. The Dodgers, a little bit weak on the pitching, but they've got some good young guys. I could see any of those three teams. And the Royals, of course, being the next World Series champion.
Right. Henry Olson, thanks very much. Let's strap in our seatbelts for primary season and baseball season. It's Stephen Hayward sitting in for Bill Bennett on Morning in America. We'll be right back after these messages. Don't go away.